because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
We start recording.
Okay.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right.
It felt bad, actually, that I just said that first, because this is your catchphrase.
Yes. No, it is. It is my catchphrase. I've been using it for a while. You know, it's... when things feel right, they feel right. I only do things that feel right, Robert.
And this podcast?
It feels very right. Yes, it feels. We've been talking about it for a while now, and I'm not the best scheduler and communicator in this world. So, hey, but here we are.
I just love Prof's giggle in the background.
Yeah, that's like all the videos she posts. It's me doing something silly, and then you just... in the background, so it's pretty good stuff. So things feel right, things feel wrong. I don't do things that feel wrong. I do things that feel right. So
you sometimes do things that feel wrong, and what are these occasions?
The only time, or the only specifically, it's more of a person that can get me to do something that doesn't feel right, and that's the Prof and Corinne Carr.
And you guys just got back from Peru. We're in Newport now for MLP.
Uh-huh.
And what happened? You got married in Peru. I'll just say it.
Yes. No, we did get married in Peru. It was lovely.
There was
a little bit of aggressive climbing on mountains.
At least you're not injured.
Yes. No. I didn't re-injure myself or anything. So, you know, I'm not the, I would say overall, I'm fairly risk averse. So some of the, you know, glacier climbing and mountain climbing and having full gear and attached to a guide on a rope, you know, that didn't necessarily feel right, but you know, it's Corinne. What can I do?
But how did it feel after you did it? Did it still not feel right? Like I should not have done that.
It never felt right.
That's funny because usually like sometimes it's just like getting out of your comfort zone. And it's uncomfortable, but then you do it and you're like, oh, it wasn't so bad. But in your case, it just never felt right.
And that's for everything, Rob. So it's like people, like I get that people do things out of their comfort zone. They get that thrill. They might even be buzzed up for a couple of days, you know, because they accomplished something. I just don't get that. Like as soon as it's over, I'm just like, man, I don't want to do that again. So, you know, that's what it is. What can I say?
So no more mountain climbing. So Prof, on to the next adventure. You got to keep running through new stuff so he doesn't have to do the same thing over again.
Yeah. We did rapids. We done all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it's, well, I have nothing else to
Adventurous
say.
Adam.
Adventurous Adam. Safari Stone. Safari Stone in the wild, yeah. So, no, it was a lovely trip. She's a great gal, as you know, and I can't be happier with everything. Headed straight to MLP. Had to make a really tough decision. Actually, we were both a little bit injured leading up to it, so I had to make a really tough decision to not play this MLP, my favorite event of the year. And we had a fill-in, Hayden Patrickman, who played completely fine, did a nice job, but we were not able to get out of the elimination round. So,
yeah it's you know, you chose that decision. I easily could have chosen the same decision.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played much this year because of health injuries. Been away in Hawaii now, so it's a little tougher to get places.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted to play regardless, and I felt like I could move fine, but obviously not as explosive, a little tougher to move in mix, cover more court, but men's felt fine. A little rusty, for sure. Haven't played much. But fun event, always. We got through pool play.
Yeah, got through pool play,
You did not.
I did not.
Well, you didn't play.
Yeah, I didn't play, right. So,
well, just to kind of back up a little bit, so this is the It Feels Right podcast with Rob Nunnery, myself, Adam Stone, co-host. Been in pickleball a while, been a top pro for a long time. Won some of the biggest tournaments, got into the finals, U.S. Open doubles. One of the most accomplished players on tour. So for people that don't have context about pro pickleball, that's this guy. And you're not done.
Yeah, I'm definitely not done. And I'll be honest, when I got injured the first couple tournaments, didn't really bother me, but I'm starting to get itchy. Yeah, for sure. And I don't really like to toot my own horn, but I'm going to right here.
Please do.
I'm actually, Robert, the year-end championship men's doubles for PPA and APP. APP Boca Raton and PPA Vegas championships last year. So just throwing that out there.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, to be expected. If you weren't, I'd be disappointed in you.
Yeah, right. So, been around. I mean, it just seems like just the other day that I was a little bit of a newcomer or someone that was kind of hopping on the scene, and all of a sudden I'm a veteran. So cool times in the sport, things happening quickly, And yeah, I think I got a couple years left in me, but been doing a little commentary with the time off, you know, not being able to play, and I have been enjoying that. Always do a little bit of teaching on the side as well, and so I think as of right now, I'm gonna, playing or not, I'm gonna be in the
pickleball space.
Pickleball space moving forward for sure.
Love it. And it's interesting, it's kind of almost full circle, because right when I first got into pickleball, I was in Austin, and I think you were living in your car at the time, based in Houston though. But
correct, and it felt right, and I was gonna do it back and forth, Arizona to Florida, just trying to get good games in and good practice.
That's amazing. But when I was first coming on, like when you would stop in Austin, I would always like drop everything to try to make it to that day, like with the Dormans, good friends in Austin. Walter, Christina Dorman, who kind of lead the charge with new up and coming players there. So they were so amazing when I first started, and you know, you would always be nice enough to go play with that crew and practice with that crew. And that's really what got me kind of itching to play higher level pickleball, is playing you and just getting lit up at the beginning. And I was like, how is this guy? Cause like we'd get up, like I remember it would just be a random game and we would get up like 9-3. And then you'd like flip the switch and turn it on and just start ripping everything and closing and shaking, baking yourself. Yeah. I'm like, this guy.
So solo shake and bake for sure. No, I totally remember that crew, the Dormans, Kevin Stark, a couple of those Austin players, you know, had some good times with them and some good play. They always set it up, and I was happy to get there. And I remember you, you definitely had a little work to do on your soft game.
Oh yeah.
But I remember you, what I liked about your game right off the bat is you let all of my out shots go out, and having a good eye, like that's a super underrated skill. And to have that early on, I was like, you know, that's definitely something there. You always had the hands and the exchanges, but, that soft games come a long way, and, definitely a complete player now. So,
when I first started, I wish I would have started, I started probably like how most tennis players start, like being hard and trying to attack everything and being aggressive and rip everything. I actually wish that I would have not done that and just foundational started soft game, nothing else, no attacks, no driving, and just built from there, built up rather than, you know, trying to do everything and then slow everything. I feel like that's harder to do when you're first coming from tennis.
For sure.
So like any tennis players looking to convert, you're not going to change the game. Like, yes, people come in and they rip and the paddle's changing and you have more grit and there's more grip. The ball can, you can manipulate the ball more. But pickleball, you have a 7-foot kitchen on both sides. That's never going to go away. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't go away. I mean, I know there's a lot of rules and stuff changing, but that should never go away. I think it's the most beautiful part of the sport.
Definitely.
But with that kitchen in place, you're never going to be, like, the soft game will always be relevant. You always need it. You always need to have it. You'll need to be good at it. So I still think that's the foundational element that all tennis players coming in should start with.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember you even messaged me a couple times on Facebook after sessions. And I was just like, Rob, you can obviously out-hit this crew.
Yeah.
Out-dink them, you know, and just block. Maybe you could counter and win the point. Just block, dink, beat them with soft stuff. And you know, it's just a necessity, because you can wail away, but you will get to that threshold that you cannot get further. There has to be some balance. You can be a more soft player, you can be a more aggressive player, but if you don't have a little bit of both, you're just not going to make it at the pro level. So
yeah, and what you told me was like, to be relevant, you have to have the soft game.
You have to, because there's just whether it's a bad matchup for you, you're not feeling it, you have to have some form of backup plan. You can't just hit through these guys. They're just, hands are too good. So I'm all for you having that aggressive style and being that aggressive player. But if you don't have, you know, 25% soft to go with your, you know, your 3/4 power game, you're just not gonna cut it.
It's not. Good times back in Austin.
No, definitely.
That was what, probably early, late 2019?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. So. I was. Yeah. Like I said, I was just
just roaming.
Yeah. I mean, I would drive 2.5 hours round trip to the other side of Houston to play with, you know, 4-0s and 4-5s. You know, and it was just, I think a lot of people kind of had that mindset, especially when they first started. It's just super addicting, and you know, I remember having dreams about pickleball and all that stuff.
Same.
And still very much love the game, but you know, that first 6 months or year to 18 months, man, it's pretty intense.
It's like crack, because like you know that you have the ability to compete like at the highest level. So like you're really motivated to do it.
Oh, big time.
And
yes.
it's a hard game to solve, really. Like there's so many interesting elements of like touch feel shots that are frustrating. Like I think back and look back at like some of my first games, I'm like, oh my God, dude, the way you played was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure.
But yeah, no. So I think, you know, in terms of the popularity and like that's what hooks everybody at the beginning.
Definitely.
Like everybody can be pretty decent at it to start.
Yes.
And it hooks you.
Easy to learn, hard to master. And that's just, I of course, I always relate things to poker because, you know, that was such a big part of my life for so long. And it's, I just see, you can see the obsession. And when like you, people, when they first get going in poker, it's just like pickleball.
Similar.
It's different than other stuff, and that's why I think it has staying power. So poker hasn't gone anywhere, and pickleball's not going anywhere either.
Yeah, I remember I had a roommate in college, Matt. I don't know if he's actually a roommate. Like I think he slept on the couch quite a bit, and I don't think he paid rent, so maybe he wasn't.
Yeah, man,
roommate, sure. But I remember he would play poker sundown to sun up, nonstop, and just yell fish all night.
Yeah, fish. Yeah,
just no, all night long.
So, like, you know, it sounds about right. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely some similarities there. And pickleball,
it feels right.
There's no doubt about it.
I want to like a counter of how many times we say it feels right.
Yeah,
it's going to be significant.
It's going to be a lot.
So I feel like we have the right name for the podcast.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So that's the intro to the podcast. Rob Nunnery, Adam Stone. Oh, almost got you with the antlers. I don't know why there's antlers here, but there are. Staying at a lovely house with a host that was gracious enough to let us stay, or let me stay. You could stay too, I guess.
Yeah.
You're here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Newport. Newport's awesome. I always love coming here for the weather. MLP has been, it's been different. It's the first event they've done outside of Dripping Springs, mm-hmm. outside of Dreamland. And, you know, there's a whole set of challenges that comes with, you know, they had it dialed in at Dreamland.
For sure.
You know, they'd done it twice. The second one was great. First one was awesome. Just, it was new. It was exciting. Players loved it. Second was fantastic. They really catered to the players. Great, great support, you know, great players tent, all meals catered, physical therapists on, you know, on standby, massage therapists, like the whole thing.
First class.
You're a pro athlete. It's cool. Newport, a little different. I mean, still great, right? Like, players' tent's awesome. The setting, nice little stadium court. Also mm-hmm. have a grandstand court, which the viewing ability of that court's awesome, too, because you're right on top of it.
Right.
Kind of at an elevated spot. But, yeah, I mean, MLP's had its challenges this event.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I do think, and there was more going on. There was a duper tournament
yep.
at the venue as well.
Yep.
And how the courts were set up to view was completely fine, but that you did have that building in the middle. So I still think the vibe was awesome, but it was a little bit more spread out than at Dripping Springs, where yeah. you have both courts right there. So maybe the energy was kind of split a little bit with that building being in the middle. I know that there was a couple issues with some stream stuff and some rules stuff as well. First class event, love it. We're all, you know, privileged to be able to play this event, but there was definitely a couple bumps in the tournament this weekend. And
the one thing I loved about the way it was set up at Dreamland is you had the big bleachers that they put up for the center court, the championship court. And at the top of those bleachers, very similar to like US Open on some courts, you can actually look on the other side and see the other court,
right.
which really,
right.
really
right.
cool, right?
Right?
Like you can pop this way, pop that way, and see everything that's going on. Like mm-hmm. I love that aspect. So the more they're able to do that kind of thing, it's really cool. And I know they're doing different locations. I think the next one's in Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what that layout's going to look like. But yeah, overall they've done great stuff. It's again my favorite event to play each year. I love the team atmosphere. Struggled this morning a little bit. Mm-hmm. Rough match.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't play well. Felt really off and rusty this morning. Lost to BLQK. They played great. Lacey Schneeman.
Schneeman, I believe.
Schneeman
yes.
popped in for Paris Todd and played unbelievably. Like she's, you know, her ball's very flat. She's clearing the net by half an inch every ball, every dink, and just not missing.
Didn't miss.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's like there's no margin for error there, and
right.
there were still no errors.
Yeah, right. No, I know.
So really, really, you know, fantastic performance by her. You know, our women had a big lead in the women's match. I think at the switch, it was 11-6.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty significant. And then I think we ended up losing pretty comfortably, 21-16, 17, right. Something like that.
Right.
So they went on a tear, and she started playing really, really well. And she was her hands were lightning fast. She was countering everything, and she hits the hell out of the ball.
Yeah,
she can smack it.
She's not very big, but she's pretty much all muscle.
Yeah.
So she can definitely kind
of... Reminds me of myself.
Yes, exactly. That's what...
Elite professional athlete.
Elite, explosive, dynamic professional athlete. That's exactly how I would describe myself. So I think, and I'm not saying anything about her, long-term ability, but I think we've seen this quite a few times where a player has a couple good tournaments or they're not known and they have some really good results or really maybe give someone, a very, very good player, trouble in a heads-up situation. Yeah. And then as they get seen a little bit more, the talented top players get a little bit more used to their shots and used to their patterns. Yeah. And so I think that does happen a lot, and maybe that could have been in play a little bit with her. No one had really seen her. No one really knew what she was going to do, and she played well.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you're absolutely right. First time you see somebody and, you can – that's the interesting thing about the sport is, like, the more you play, everybody gets so familiar with your game mm-hmm. and your patterns and your speed-ups and where you like to hit the ball and where you like to counter. And so it'll be interesting to see – and I think she's a great singles player, right? She has had some great singles results. So that's not going anywhere.
Sure.
But on the double side, it'll be really interesting to see the staying power.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And we even talked about it a little bit yesterday. Sometimes you get lit up more in the first or second round than you do the medal matches. Yeah. Now, you're rarely going to lose that early round match, and you often will lose the medal matches, but you're so those smart players are making good decisions, and you kind of, it's a little more like controlled. It's like a controlled environment.
100%.
And those, that first round or two, it's kind of the wild, wild west. Someone's attacking something they shouldn't, doing something funky, and they'll kind of catch you. But that also is coupled with the, like, 11 dink errors. So, so that's kind of how it works. So it is interesting to see somebody new for sure.
It's absolutely true. Somebody will be speeding up off their back. Yeah. But fade away.
Yeah, and you're like, what
you missed
happening?
Just because you're so shocked that they did it. What are you doing? You can't do that. And then, followed by 11 dink errors.
Yeah, 11 dink errors, and you usually end up winning 3-3 or something like that.
Nonetheless frustrating.
But there's always a couple shots. They kind of make you look silly or pretzel you up or something like that. So definitely.
So MLP, got the finals tonight. You guys will know who the winner is by the time you listen to this or see this. So to get into kind of the nitty-gritty of MLP,
mm-hmm.
as you mentioned, there was some, streaming. Like, this was an interesting weekend because PPA put on an event up north in LA, not too far from here, about an hour and a half, hour. And Selkirk Lab Showdown, also a different, unique format of, I think they had three pools of eight players, maybe, I don't know, maybe more. And it was kind of, you play with everybody, and then whoever has the most points or the best results out of that pool would advance to an actual tournament-style bracket. I don't know how they paired the people. Do you know?
I do not know. I saw the list with the results of the matches, but I'm not exactly sure how they paired. Yeah. And I think it was two pools. It was three. Okay.
We got confirmation from Prof that it was three pools,
yes,
Adam.
Prof knows.
Do not question Prof.
Yeah, that was my bad. I never should have said anything like that. Thank you for correcting me.
Well, it's nice to have a fact checker on site.
It is true.
It's incredible. Yeah. And if you're wondering why isn't Prof just popping in here, don't worry. Don't worry. She will be here.
Uh-huh.
We might have a guest appearance on the first It Feels Right podcast.
Yes.
Okay. So, So weird weekend. Not weird, but just, kind of an important weekend, right? Like, MLP is putting on their event. They want to show that they have a fantastic product in pickleball and pro pickleball. PPA is obviously doing the same thing. I don't think it was intentional that they ended up on the same weekend, actually. From what I've heard from parties, is it was a little coincidental.
Okay.
But at the same time, they kind of put on similar events. MLP has its unique format team event. PPA tried to do something similar. Were they games to 15? Are they timed? Do you know?
I believe it was games to 15 in the PPA tournament. Yes.
Regular scoring.
Yes.
Okay.
Regular scoring.
Got it. So, but again, first time they've done a unique event like this, unique scoring, unique format. And first day on both, like I was trying to, you know, I was curious to see how the PPA thing was going, see how it was run. Couldn't get through like more than a few points at a time without it pausing and, you know, give me a spinny. Mm-hmm. Tried to watch, well, I was first on an MLP and I was kind of pumped because I was like, you know, had people from Hawaii who have never seen pro pickleball,
right,
like want to watch. So send it out to all those people and then they pull it up. Their first experience of pro pickleball is just a stream that's unwatchable
and no sound, right?
And no sound,
no sound.
But
yeah,
you couldn't even watch really.
Right.
Like it was so choppy.
Right.
So a little bum that's like somebody's first experience,
sure,
with pro pickleball and watching it, because it just looks super amateurish, right? But same thing on the PPA side, so kind of blown opportunities on both ends. But I think the stream got cleaned up, right, for MLP and also PPA.
Yes.
In the following days. I don't know who won in terms of PPA versus MLP in terms of,
oh, I have no idea,
product.
Yeah,
I haven't heard much feedback on how the PPA event was. So curious, Prof, have you heard anything on the PPA event? Hasn't heard anything either. So curious on how that kind of unfolds and how the response was from viewers and also players. Mm-hmm. See how it went, because they had their contracted players, and then they brought in some other guys like Stocksrud, who's great singles player, getting better at doubles, but wasn't on an MLP team.
Right.
Ryan Cherry, Cassandra Gerke, some other players that didn't make the cut for MLP, so they pulled them in, which was also interesting, right?
Because
right, you have, you know, call it the top 5, top 10 players in the game, and then you have people that probably top 50.
Right, sure.
Which is a really, really large contrast,
yes,
in terms
definitely,
of ability.
Definitely.
And so, interesting, sure. But I don't know if it's a great product to put on display for,
yeah, right,
for the tennis,
yeah,
channel.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not exactly sure either, and I think that it was some, maybe not as extreme, but a little bit of the same thing in MLP, where the one last year was pretty stacked. Everybody was in it, and there was less teams, I believe. Is that correct?
Were there only 8 teams?
Were there? Is that right? Okay, and right,
wow,
right, yeah. So
it feels like a lifetime ago.
Right, yeah, I know. And then this year, it's a little. So you have a little bit more of the gap between some of the players. So it does. Yeah, it's interesting to see that dynamic, because it is kind of interesting because there's something to pick on, and you can kind of see some patterns develop and some more interesting type of points. But at
it's just more obvious for a new person watching. Is
yes,
that what you mean?
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, they're constantly going at
right, for
the weaker,
sure,
player,
for sure,
and you
for
see
sure
why they're doing that.
Right, right.
Whereas in like a more nuanced match with similar levels, you don't understand the patterns if you're somebody new watching.
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's more, you know, obviously there's some patterns you want to get in when everyone's tight, but it's just easier. It's just more kind of like regular high percentage play, as opposed to pick, do everything we can to get a pattern to this player. So I do think it's interesting in some regards, for sure.
Yeah. And with MLP, it's only going to get kind of a wider gap as well, because next year they're going to 16 teams.
Definitely.
Which means, you know, 32 women, 32 men, you know, minus the contracted PPA players,
sure,
if they're not allowed to play yet. It's going to be 32nd woman. I mean, that's,
yeah, that's real.
It's,
yeah.
it's weak.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'll say it's,
yeah,
weak. It's going to be rough.
Right.
Like, so whoever that first female pick is, like the first guy pick, you're gonna have the 32nd guy. That's going to be a really good player.
Yeah. Right. For sure.
You know,
for sure.
Like there's so much depth on the men's side, which is why I put a tweet out not long ago saying, like, the lowest hanging fruit in pro sports right now, in my opinion, is high level tennis players, women's tennis players converting to pickleball. It's pretty much if you do it right, between earnings, sponsorships, you play for a year, get into it, get better, practice, all that stuff, start,
sure,
competing at a high level, start playing pro tournaments, APP, whatever, teach a little bit, like, six-figure income.
Completely agree. Yes,
pretty,
completely
pretty,
agree.
Not, and not very difficult to do.
Right.
If you're a high-level tennis player that, you know, especially if you like doubles and you like fast hand stuff,
uh-huh,
you know, it's really, really doable. And I think, actually, in pro sports, we talk about this a lot. Like when money's involved and it's a game, people are good at things. That's a quote from Adam Sona.
People are good at things. So
when money's involved,
it's a game and it's money. People are going to be good for sure. So definitely some the girls a little more shallow, but a lot of new faces sprinkled in and some good talent. But we'll see if we really get an influx at some point in the next couple of years, or even 5 years down the line. There's still a pretty big gap between 1 and 32. Cause as you said, the men, it's just deeper. There's just more of them. And 1 to 32 for the men and 1 to 32 in the women
it's night and day.
It's night and day.
So but I guess my point in terms of like the teams and the draft is the first women's pick getting the 32nd woman, like that's not what you want. Like I think they're at a disadvantage, right? Because you've got the top female, but on the men's side, the top male can be a little bit more dominant, take more court. You don't really see that on the female side as much, right? Like it's almost more of a 50-50 way they play. And gender and women's doubles.
So I think I would prefer to have the 1 and 32 man, and I would prefer to have the 15 and 16 woman.
No doubt. Yeah. I don't think there's any question. I think that team will crush the other team.
Sure.
The 1 and 32 woman, and then what would it be? It would be
something like 15, 16, right. Something two picks in the middle somewhere. Yeah. So, I think that's absolutely true. And, just from a size perspective, the number one guy can help a little bit more than the number one woman, who is obviously extremely talented and an awesome player, but to cover for their 32nd partner is just more difficult. They're just not as big as guys. So the court coverage is just more difficult. That's why you see the ladies staying back a lot in the singles game. It's just they just don't have that wingspan, and that's just what it is. Yeah. So
really curious to see how it shakes out next year. Like we're seeing, even with the alternates, that played on the women's side this year, you had Recker fill in and they won. You had Schneeman come in this morning and beat us. Like, they're good.
Yeah.
they're not slouches,
Yeah.
So, if we had 24 women this time, I think the alternates would probably be not middle of the pack, but definitely drafted in the top 24 at this point. Cause the draft happened back in the actual draft happened, I think in April.
Right.
Right. So it's all not very long ago, but pickleball is wild, pro pickleball, especially you're going to have people come in, medal really quickly in pro pickleball, and Paris Todd, she was the 18th pick. That's a first round woman, easy.
Yeah, definitely.
And she's done that in a matter of a few months.
Sure. No, it's been impressive for her for sure, because I played her in St. Louis in mixed, and not that I wasn't impressed, but she was doing a lot of blocking, seemed a little less comfortable at the kitchen line in some certain situations, and then just a handful of months later, she's loading sides and slapping the ball and countering with power at the right times, and it's she's a completely different player. So it's been an impressive transformation. I think she made it much quicker than I was expecting to be very relevant in singles right away, and then to have that same relevancy in doubles. It's been a nice job by her.
So I guess in terms of that point, it's this time next year, early next year for the next draft, December for the draft, everything could change so fast in pro pickleball. Players come on. So who knows what the landscape of pro women's pickleball will look like at the end of the year. I think it'll continue to get deeper, like the men's has gotten deeper because of that specific reason is Paris is seeing that she can come in, create a brand for herself. She beat Anna Lee in the finals. That took her off, right? Like sponsors, she can make money. She's in demand.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And it's,
and that didn't take a lot. Yeah.
Yes.
So a few good results and boom, especially if you're marketable.
Yeah, definitely. I think
she's very articulate.
She seems to have that in spades, So yeah, whatever, your people on the Instagram and Facebook and stuff say they like her style. They like what she's bringing to the table. And so, it was quick. It was quick.
So, be interesting to see how that continues to play out in terms of MLP as a whole. Some growing pains this week, specifically with me. I had obviously coming off knee surgery it was June 21st. It's August 7th now. Looking at 6 weeks. Doc, surgeon in Austin told me 6 to 8 weeks for the recovery. So we're kind of on the shorter end of the timeline of what it's been. Worked really hard to, they had me the first 14 days doing 200, what was it? No, it was, yeah, 200 reps of five different exercises every day.
Oh, wow.
1,000 reps. You know how long that takes?
A lot.
I watched Yellowstone every day.
Did it?
I was just doing leg lifts. Like,
did it feel right, the rehab?
I'm torn. You know what felt right was laying down watching Yellowstone for four seasons and loving it. What didn't feel right was starting leg lifts at 8 a.m. and not being done by 1 p.m.
Yeah, no, seriously, yeah, that's a lot of reps.
No, but like what it did was it didn't let my, you know, quad atrophy, and I felt like I think it allowed me to come back in time. Like that was my goal, was to get back for this event, because I was super bummed that I missed Austin. Randomly went down for a squat after mixed doubles day. You saw me there in New York, and it's like after we finished playing, go down just a squat. As I come up, I feel a little right in the inner part of my knee, and I'm like, oh, that does not feel right. And I look down, and there's like, you could see something like, basically when I got the MRI, there was like a flap of my meniscus that was pushing out, and that's what you could see. And I went over to the physical therapist, and he was working on Paris Todd, like getting deep into her upper thigh. Sure. I've got prop on the edge of her seat. I've got prop. No, but he like, yeah, I mean, just, and I'm like in pain, like hobbling. I'm like, I'd really like you to look at me. And he's just continuing in there, just kneading those thighs. And I'm just like, okay, he's happy. Like, he's enjoying himself. He's whatever. But like, and then like, he finally gets me on the table, and he's like, oh, by the way, you were like standing, I thought you were like, you know, tore your ACL or something, but like doing the test on your knee, it seems like it's not fine. It seems like it's fine. So, you know, if you want to come get some treatment before you play tomorrow, I'm like, bro, it does not feel fine. I see something sticking out of my inner part of my knee.
Yeah.
So it wasn't fine. Even though like I was supposed to play with Brandon French the next day, which that would have been just pure entertainment.
Yeah, he's
like, he's a good
real,
time.
Real calm, flatline player, you know. Yeah, Brandon French.
Brandon French. Shout out to Brandon. He if anything, like he has fun on court.
Yeah, no doubt. That was a I actually played him with Dekel. It was a very bad tournament for us because I got injured as well with my calf.
Yeah.
But we played we played French. I think it was Caden.
Yeah.
Caden,
that's right.
Mimoff.
He filled in for me.
And I mean, we ended up winning, but the second game was pretty tight. And
Brandon
and
will
French,
do some stuff.
French, you know, he caught me a couple times, and you know, he was feeling the vibe, feeling the energy, and so it was a tight second game, but we were able to edge them out. So he is entertaining to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's a good player too. But yeah, so I was hoping to play Austin. Got to Austin, got MRI, complex meniscal tear, whatever that means, with the flap. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so went to see, I don't even know what I was talking about. I'm getting into the health story. But regardless, went to see like the sports med. Did the MRI, saw it had issues, sent me to a surgeon, saw the knee surgeon. He was like, I don't even know if I should have told him, but I told him about the other health stuff, the butt stuff. And he was like, if you have an infection, like I can't operate on your knee. Like the infection, like because blood will pool in your knee when I cut into you. And if there's infection in the bloodstream that carries into your knee, we'll have real issues in your knee.
Oh, man.
So he was like, can't operate on you. And I'm bummed, right? Because I'm already thinking about the time window that I have between then to like having enough time to recover before Newport. Because at that point it was like 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, researching online, it looks like it'll take about 8 weeks to recover. So I'm like super pissed that I can't have the knee operated on. Cause the guy was like, we'll squeeze you in. We'll get it done, but you have to get the infection cleared out. So he referred me to a colorectal surgeon who, when I saw him, he was like flabbergasted that I played in this condition last week. He bit me over on a table. Bit me over, you know, looked back there and was just like, cut into me, little incision and drainage, which not, it's happened in Maui too. Like that guy couldn't figure out like what to do. Like he just saw that it was building up and he had to cut it. And worst pain ever, having like already having pain in your ass and then having somebody stick a needle in there to numb it. and then not always having it numb, and then using a razor, whatever, a scalpel. Is that what they
scalpel,
use?
Scalpel,
not
a
razor.
Scalpel, yeah.
Well, a razor blade sounds pretty ghetto, but using a scalpel to actually cut into it, and feeling it sometimes because the numbing, like the bacteria or the infection, will kind of nullify the numbing agent sometimes. So it kills the numbing. So there's several times where I felt the actual incision, which was
this is quite a story.
There's a few people that I might wish that on, but I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Actually, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Adam's like, who?
No, I wasn't thinking that at all.
Adam's like, I already know.
yeah, for sure. That sounds like.
I have no idea where that story was going.
Yeah. Well,
Prof, where was I going with that?
I was enthralled, though.
Yeah. Well, with the scalpel or the numbing agent
yes,
that didn't work.
The numbing agents and the, yeah, all that good stuff.
But anyways, had to have that surgery done. Was hoping to have the knee surgery like a week later and hoping that like that surgery would clear out the infection. It didn't. I was still like in a fair amount of pain a week after. So waited another week. So it was basically 2 weeks between that surgery and my knee surgery. And they were like, it's cleared up enough to where we think the risk is small enough because they're only going in and cleaning something up. They're not, you know, putting actually anything in there.
Right.
So they're like, the risk is minimal. Go for it. So did it June 21st. And then, yeah, did 1,000 reps a day for 14 days and just, you know, got back in time. Not as explosive as I wanted, but happy. Anyways, talking about the rules of MLP. This was a bad tangent. That was a really long bad tangent. But maybe you learned something.
I was letting you go, man. I was
you
letting
you reel me in, dear Lord. God, that's an aggressive one. So anyway, so that led to we had a match yesterday. Last match of pool play against the Florida Smash, right?
Right. Correct.
Florida Smash. No, the bus.
Oh, right. That's Kyle, Stratman, yeah. Millie, and Wes Burrows, I believe.
Yeah. And so played men's, played mixed. We go to the Dream Breaker. It's 2-2. And, you know, I've talked about this a lot, like the alternate rule. Like even in a – I did a health update on Instagram before I came to Newport saying, you know, excited to play. Health's still iffy. Knee's probably 70%. And if we get to singles, like that's going to be tough because, you know, I don't feel, you know, a knee at 70% in singles. One, I don't want to hurt it more. I don't want to tear an ACL or make something like make a actual recovery, like 6-8 weeks, no problem.
Right.
But having like a ACL torn and something serious, I don't want to go through it when I've dealt with health stuff all year. So I just wanted to be on the cautious side and everything that I had talked about in terms of having alternates and subs. Like I've talked about this at, you know, a good amount with Brooks at MLP, who's the president, and then it's like, why is nobody using short-term alternates? Like, it's in the rules that you can bring somebody in for singles or have somebody sub in. Because I talked about it at the last MLP when Simone was like, I don't know if I can play. I was like, well, Rachel James is right there. Why don't we call her in for that? And she's like, no, I'll just play. And we got shellacked by the Florida Smash in singles there. And so ever since then, I was just like, that's a strategy you should use. Like, why we should have taken Rachel James, had her play singles, and it's just smart. So all of the understanding that I had around that rule with alternates was not necessarily that it was for injury. You know, it was around strategy and gameplay and how to actually maximize what you can put in terms of your team on the court. And then here, it seems like it changed to like a full-on just injury. Like, you have to have an injury on court for an alternate, which I never knew that to be the case. I know MLP, the MLP format and rules probably better than most. And, you know, I put stuff out there about using subs and alternates and singles, and I've never had any kind of anybody say otherwise, right? Like, I've talked to Brooks about this, and there's never a thing where, oh, one, you can't do that, or two, you'd have to sit out the next match, which is what happened to me. So I decided to sub in singles and went home. We won the Dream Breaker, thankfully. Gabe Tardio came in and played great. Go home, shower, get ready to come back to the courts to warm up, and Simone just tells me they're not going to let you play. And for me, it was super frustrating because, one, there's no rule saying that that's the case. I didn't find out, like, nobody even told me. Like, I had to go track down Brooks and ask to talk to him to even get an answer about it. Like, why? Like, communicate to me. Like, tell me it's, you know, this is what we decided. This is why. I had no idea that the other teams even had like a meeting or like there was a big uproar. I knew like Kyle Yates and Stratman were pissed after the match because I saw them talking, and Julian Arnold. And so I saw the buzz happening, but I just got out of there and went home to shower, and like my health stuff's an issue. So I just needed to, my butt hurt. So I have a little heating pad that I came back to rest my butt on. And yeah, it was just, I was super bummed getting back to the courts and finding out that I couldn't play because I'd worked so hard to come back. If I would have known when I did sub for the Dreambreaker that I wouldn't be able to play the next match, I would have just played singles. I would have just played. And I even talked to Steve Kuhn right before the Dreambreaker, and he's like, I'm making a veto decision right now. He's like, people are going to be upset, but you know, we're going to let you sub. And I was like, okay. Like, I was like, my injury is well documented. Obviously I have a knee injury coming back from a surgery. Like, I'm not healthy. And he was like, people are going to be upset, but we're going to allow it. If he would have just said, we're going to allow it, but you're not going to be able to play your next match, okay, understand, I'm going to play. But that wasn't the case. So coming back and learning that I couldn't play was super frustrating, mm-hmm. and infuriating, if I will. And should I keep going?
No, you're doing good.
So that's a very long-winded explanation. But yeah, I mean, to say the least, it felt like they were... I had a talking to about this. But it felt like they were making up rules as they went. Rules that weren't in place. And I get it. You're in a, you know, what they sent in their text was they're in hyper-growth mode. Sure. It feels like a rule that needed to be fleshed out already.
It leaves a lot to be interpretation. It's a lot of gray area, and in this situation with this kind of new money and these kind of prizes and all these players, it just has to be very, very black and white. You can't leave anything to interpretation because it's going to cause something like this, basically. Yeah. So,
and I understand, honestly, I understand the other teams and players' frustrations. Mm-hmm. What I don't like is that, you know, if there's some thought that I was intentionally trying to manipulate the system or game the system, not the case. Like, my understanding was that I could sub, have somebody come in, I didn't have to risk injuring my knee further, and that I'd be able to continue on. Like, I just didn't want to have unnecessary risk on my knee when I've worked so hard to come back, period. The end of story. I had no idea that, like, I heard other teams had tried to sub and they wouldn't let them. I had no idea. I have no idea what's going on. I just asked if I could sub. They said yes. Nothing else. Not that I couldn't come back. And yeah, so I thought it was all fine. And then I come back to the courts and it's a whole shitstorm.
Yes. No, it was. I was.
So you know that side of the, you know, I don't know anything about that. I still really don't. Yeah, I don't know what all the arguments were.
It was really buzzed. It was very buzzy. Yes. Yeah. Around the player area, some of the outside practice courts, lots of little pockets of people talking about things and that. So, yeah, I had my, you know, I had an IPA in my bag, a bag of a Smart Pop popcorn, and I was just watching the shit show, and it was, you know, definitely interesting, and there was a lot going on there for 2 or 3 hours after that match, for sure.
So give me some of the, like, I gave you an idea of kind of the arguments that I heard, but like, what were you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, just the stuff that I was hearing was, I didn't really hear anybody really like bashing you or saying, it was more just about the rule in general and how it's kind of ridiculous and unacceptable to have that in place, and that's really what it was.
Yeah,
about.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Sure.
I feel like that rule has to be concrete. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, I've talked, like, I wasn't shy about, like, that strategy. Like, I talked about it,
right,
literally,
right,
an Instagram,
yeah,
post.
Yeah.
I talked about it on the last podcast I did on the Freestyle Boys with Casey. I was like, that's a legit strategy, and I'll do it. Like,
right,
there's never any pushback. And I mean, I know those guys have listened to that podcast, and I know they've seen the post. So it's not like,
right,
it's not like, oh, this came out of left field, I can't believe he did this. And it's just strange.
Yeah, no, the rules are the rules, and that's why they're there. So I don't think, like you said, I mean, if you're trying to take advantage, why would you broadcast it?
Yeah.
You know, or trying to like be sneaky about it. You're just like, oh, these are the rules. If we get in this situation, we're going to do what we can within the rules to optimize our team's chances of winning. So, yeah, so that's obviously where the issue is right at the heart of the rule. I think everything else is kind of, you know, white noise. It's the rule is there, and that's what it is, and that's the issue.
Yep. So that's MLP. yeah, so growing, I get it, growing pains. Like, I want MLP to succeed. I still think it's the best product. I think they're doing a great job. I love the format. I love everything about it. Yeah, these are just things that hopefully don't continue to happen. That, 'cause sure, growing pains, sure, but when it adversely affects players, mm-hmm, it's not okay.
No, definitely. And I,
not just me. Adversely affects the other teams as well,
no,
right?
Because
they're like, oh, I could have done this. Why'd he get to do this? Like, I get all that.
Right.
Like, I don't, like, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that does, I'm not saying it's a total justification, but hyper growth for sure breeds things like this to happen a little bit higher, yeah, percentage of the time. You're not kind of slowly building. It's just like you're really going, so more things can go wrong. But yeah, like I said earlier, we're all very, it's very cool that we're all here at this event doing these things,
100%.
And I have no doubt that there might be a couple more pains along the way,
yeah,
but they're going to do what they need to do to not have these hiccups anymore, and I feel really confident about that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I mean, bring it back full circle. Like, end of the day, we're getting paid a decent paycheck to hit a wiffle ball around a court
for sure.
And yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it is good stuff. We're hitting a wiffle ball with a composite paddle, and I'm leaving the venue today. I see Chuck Taylor and Thomas Wilson chatting with James Blake.
Yep.
I got to hit pickleballs with Drew Brees.
I mean,
as a part owner of the Mad Drops team, you can see on my hat here. I mean that's just good stuff. So who thought, you know, having reasonable hand-eye coordination and being good at hitting a wiffle ball could get you to these places.
And having an elite physique.
Correct. I mean,
why are we doing this podcast with your shirt off?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, so I got, there's a six-pack underneath there somewhere.
This is just the first episode. There's plenty of time to show that off.
The only, if I was going to say something about someone being shirtless, is I would really like to get AJ Kohler shirtless on this podcast because his fur bird is spectacular.
We have to tell the story about Orlando and the locker room. The PPA in Orlando.
Oh, yes.
You remember this.
Yes, yes.
So we're set the scene.
Yeah, so we're at the PPA Orlando. We have a nice little spot inside in the men's locker room.
AC, baby.
Yeah, we have the AC. We're going in between matches, and we have a pretty good crew in there. I think it's
– a little rain delay.
Yeah, rain delay as well. Me, you, Pat Smith is in there. Jay Delivers is in there. And so we're just having a good time kind of shooting the crap. And so we had AJ in there as well, and he had the – he had a shirt off, and there was a little banter going on with Jay, and Jay got excited.
Very excited.
And he was, oh, look at his hair chest. classic foreigner, you know, messed up the chest hair, went with the hair chest, and we had a great laugh about that. So foreign people are funny. That's just what it is. So definitely, I will always remember that, and we definitely had a good laugh and a good crew in that spot for the PPA Orlando, definitely.
Yeah, it was good. So MLP, anything else on MLP?
Let's see, like you said, one more in Ohio.
Yep.
For the third tournament of the year.
Third and final.
Then there will be a redraft for next year, and I think they're talking about upping the tournaments to a couple more than three for next year. Nothing set in stone there.
Yep.
So I think we probably pretty much covered it.
Do we just looking at the future going forward with MLP and kind of the pro pickleball landscape, do you feel that contracted PPA players will ever be able to play MLP?
I think that...
Not ever. Within their contract term, which is 3 years. This being year one.
No.
So you think...
I think no.
So you think MLP is going to go the next 2 years minus the PPA contracted and continue to just pull in the kind of the new... up-and-coming players?
I think so,
yeah.
And I, you know, I'm sure there's several people more in the know than me, but the vibe, you know, very connected with the sport, talking to a lot of people, the kind of the vibe I get is I do not think that's going to happen.
Yeah,
but
I don't think so either.
Things change quickly.
Things change quickly.
Yeah, very, very absolutely true. So I would lean towards no on that one.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see, again, between the last MLP in Austin, which is just, what, 8 weeks ago, not long ago, to this one, there was trades, drops, pickups, supplemental draft. I'm assuming that's going to happen between now and Columbus as well.
Definitely.
Any kind of forecast on changes, adjustments that you see happening with any specific teams going from now to then?
I think there's going to be a couple drops. I would imagine there's going to be a couple drops. You know, everyone just...
It's not fun not making it out of group play.
No, for sure. And it's... Man, it's... I think the format is fantastic for the viewer, and I'm completely okay with it. You know, a lot of people don't like to change, so yeah. I've kind of got over that hump, and I'm very cool with it. But the format, I also think, allows for not the best team to win a little more frequently.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it's very quick. So I think it's
very quick.
It's a small sample size, sort of. So it's hard to know exactly what is the best composition long term for your team in these short little bursts.
Very
so
true.
I think it kind of makes people want to shuffle a little bit more, or someone just has someone could have a bad 10 minutes in the tournament, and that can change how their teammates feel about the situation.
100%.
So I think there's going to be a lot of movement, and I think with how the format is and if it stays this way, that we're going to see changes, some of them good, some of them probably, you know, looking back on it, wish they wouldn't have done that. Yep. So
it's a great point, because you're right. These games move so quick. It's rally scoring. There's added pressure, especially if you're a picked up player, a traded player.
Definitely.
Whatever. But so what you're saying is that oftentimes, you know, trades will happen or drops will happen, unwarranted necessarily, because mm-hmm. of a small sample size.
Right, exactly.
Do you think, so just had a thought when you're saying that, is I almost think it would be more beneficial to maintain your team almost throughout the year, unless something, you know, really drastic happens.
Sure.
You got drafted there for a reason.
Sure.
You're a good player.
Right, exactly.
You know, you're drafted because of a large sample size, uh-huh. a lot of data.
Right.
Right? You're not for looking sure. at a tournament or two.
Sure.
Whereas then, you know, we get into these MLP formats and you're looking at really small data, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think it's more beneficial to actually create pockets of time where the team practices together, works mm-hmm. together. Like mm-hmm. I got that question, like we did a VFriends kind of Q&A yesterday for you know, being on the fives, Gary V has an NFT project called VFriends, and they get access to MLP. So they came and we did a Q&A, a meet and greet thing. And that was one of the questions was, how often do you guys practice together? And we're like, never.
Yeah.
And it's a fair question, because like when I talked to Casey Patterson, who, you know, beach volleyball Olympian, he's like, you know, we have a national team and like, I have a partner, and like we would never live in different places.
No, for sure.
Like we live there together, and we train. Like mm-hmm. that's what you do. Like, and I think that's going to be kind of the evolution of the sport. Eventually, is you have that partner, and you guys train all the time together, and that's
absolutely.
You learn all the nuances. You know exactly how your game should be played, and you know it's always going to be a stack. You're always going to play that side. You're always going to play that side, and like
for sure.
the game is going to get to that level. But right now, it's like, oh, you just show up at a tournament. Call somebody across the country. Yeah, you want to play that?
Yeah, right.
Play New Jersey? Yeah,
right.
Sure. I mean, so that's going to change.
Definitely. And I think there's going to be more like set plays and just, you know, that's how it's going to be. Your connection and your rapport with your partner is absolutely huge. You guys are locked in. I do this, you do this. And it's now it's just two talented people playing together sometimes. You have a handful of partnerships that are pretty locked in, and you have a handful that it's just two guys that their games kind of fit together, and we're just going to go out there and play.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be some longer tournaments. There's going to be stuff in between where you have to play. And if you don't, as that talent gap gets tighter and tighter, if you don't have a locked in connection with your partner, that's a huge deal. Yeah. I think it's a huge deal right now, and it's going to be even more of a big deal as we move forward.
What's going to be the tipping point to where it's like, oh, I have to do that? Is it that the money goes to, you know, like the finals tonight, they're playing for you. If you're on the winning team, you get $25,000 per person. If you're on the losing team, you get $6,000.
Yeah, right.
It's a gigantic gap.
It's a big deal.
It's a gigantic gap. So What's the tipping point to where the Pro Tour operates like it is now, where you just show up at tournaments and you play together, mm-hmm. versus where you lock in with somebody and you live in the same place and you train all the time together? Like, what does every tournament need to be like $25,000 to the winner?
Right.
That kind of thing?
Yeah. Everyone's got a number.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever you're talking
about.
Like,
what's that worth to you, right?
Yeah,
like,
for
What's locking in a partner, training together, understanding your games very intimately, knowing exactly how you're going to play.
Yes.
Studying your opponents, like,
big time.
Detailed.
Big time.
Like, the game is going to change that, but I just wonder, like, what's the tipping
sure.
point? Because right now, I'm not willing to do it.
No, there is right? one. Yeah. I mean, me either.
So, yeah. So what is that? Like,
yeah,
what would, like,
no, definitely.
It's interesting.
And it's
like, the money's not there for me to do it right now.
It's a different number for different people.
Yeah.
Some people might do it already, or it's if they're just getting a few $100s, they're fine with putting in all that work. So
as you would say, a few $100s, I can live on 4 months.
Oh yeah,
I can live on that for 4 months.
Pre-prof. Yeah. If I won $400 for like a bronze medal, you know, I mean,
you're cruising.
I mean, I got, that's at least a month worth of living.
She's just like, what is wrong with you? I love you, but what is wrong with you?
But no, that's a great question, because it's you know, Corinne and I talk about it a lot, you know, just how different it is, how different the people are, and it's only just going to continue to get that way. Money changes things, yeah. And when we're
like, you saw it here, like it's real money. You're playing for real money now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and people get mad.
People like money.
People like money, and people get mad.
And people are people.
Yeah.
So
people are
there,
people.
There's that. So yeah, you're not making, you know, you're not getting silver and getting $600 anymore. You know, this is real stuff now.
Yeah. And I think that's just going back to, I know we talked about kind of the head-to-head weekend with PPA and MLP. And another thing that that came up was that, which would a viewer find more compelling? Like, I think watching MLP and seeing players compete for like a really big prize purse, like, well, one, the players care more, right? Like,
for
they're
sure.
fighting much harder than what I am assuming they're fighting for in the PPA up in LA.
Right.
I don't know what that purse is up there, but I know it's not large, and I know they're not playing for $25,000 a pop per person.
Definitely.
So what's your take on a casual viewer popping in the tennis channel, seeing the sport, versus like a casual viewer, let's say MLP was on the tennis channel, seeing that? Do you like what do you feel perception wise? I know for me, like, I want to see them playing for a lot of money because
yes.
caring more and
yes,
like,
but you,
but I know like what about a casual viewer?
I mean, you can see it too. Like, there's deeper breaths from the players. There's real tension. There's real stuff. And sure, you see that a little bit at regular tournaments, but it's kind of few and far between. Here, you can notice with the players the intensity and you know, some of the nervousness and some of the tightness and bigger spots and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, wait, what was your question? It was about the casual viewer.
Yeah. So, like, if you're just like, you know, scrolling through the channels and you pop in to see pickleball on TV.
Yeah.
And you see the PPA.
It has to be MLP because that prize pool, you can really physically see it, you know, that.
But I feel like the story needs to be told, right? Like, if there's somebody's just popping in, like you need to know like what the purse is, and like that needs to be the story versus just like, you know, like I flip through and I see cornhole. I have no idea what they're playing.
Right, right.
I just
no,
see
definitely.
People tossing bags, right?
Continue to talk about it. And the team aspect too. And I think that the PPA thing was individual.
Yeah.
So you were getting points individually. And the team aspect, I think, is really cool to see too, because I don't really, I mean, I have my little crew at tournaments, the people that I hang out with more than other people, but you don't really cheer that much at regular tournaments because why would you? Because you know all these people.
Yeah.
You might play with different people.
And you'll play against them probably in that event.
And so you're not really, but in this team format, to see the players so pumped up for their team and getting fired up on the sidelines and having, you know, no qualms at all about going full force for their team, I think that that is a good product in itself right there.
I agree. It shows more intensity.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, more passion.
Yeah, so I'm at a regular tournament, you know, one of my buddies hits a nice shot. I'm like, nice shot. You know, like I'm just, I don't want to go too over the top because I, you know, I don't want to, I don't want to ruffle any feathers or whatever.
But I also feel that's not just the pros. It's not just you. It's not just me. It's also, I remember the contrast going from the very first MLP last year in Austin, because the very next week was the Masters at La Quinta. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember going to La Quinta and like, it was cool. Like the setting's beautiful. You're in the desert. Everybody's wearing white. Like everything was really nice and laid out beautifully. But then you like watch matches on center court and like epic point just happens and everybody's just like,
mm-hmm.
And like that can't be the product for pro pickleball.
For sure.
It can't be.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, so that's, I don't know. I would love to see full-time pro pickleball, like team-based.
No, I agree.
Team-based, full-time.
We might be working our way towards that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be really cool. I think that's a big undertaking, right? Like, 3 events a year with this new format, with, like, these new growing pains is a big undertaking as well.
Sure.
I think going full season, big project,
right? Yeah, totally, yeah.
You know, you need a lot more money.
Totally.
Need, like, it's a big deal. But I think in terms of, like, you know, me as a player playing, like, I find that more fun.
For sure.
I think me as a viewer, you know, I've done a lot of viewing from Hawaii and since I haven't been able to play. I think as a viewer, I would also prefer to watch that. I think what needs to happen with MLP specifically is it's tough to understand in real time during the event what the standings are, what the different matchups mean. Like I could see a random pool play event, but like I would love to know exactly like this mixed doubles match. I need to know like what's on the line.
Right.
Like if they win, are they in? Are they out? Like that needs to be explained more. Just I would be glued to it if I knew like what every single matchup meant.
Right. And it is talked about, but maybe it needs to be a little more
honestly, I don't listen to the commentary very much.
Yeah. Unless I'm doing it right.
Yes.
Correct. Yes. Okay, good.
I already told you this once. And so Cameron Irwin, she was, you know, we were at dinner with a few people, Brooks included, Paris Todd, and she was just like talking about you on the mic with her MLP in Austin. And I already told you this. And Prof, his head's going to get really big if I keep talking about this. So just keep bringing him down. Like when I lift him up, you just tear him back down.
She's good at that.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're both good at that when we're with you.
Let's say what you're going to say.
Okay. Yeah,
let's
move on. Prof, you're coming on here soon. We'll get back to this. So she was just like, you know, for somebody that has, no talent, no experience, no, but she was just like, for him not doing that very often, like his, like he was so detailed, he was so good at explaining things simply for people to understand. She was like, I didn't want to tell him, I didn't want his head to get too big, but he was really good. So I think, you know, playing commentary, you got a place in the sport.
All right, good. No, Cameron.
I mean, you're not as good as me, but.
Fair enough. Who is?
No, yes. You are.
Cameron was awesome, too. She's a true professional, and, you know, her job is to, you know, not put me in bad spots, and she was leading me in. It was very
easy. It's an art form,
right?
Yeah,
it's very easy. Like, she never just, like, you know, gave me a question and then looked at me, and I was kind of like, bah, bah, bah. It was never like that. She set it up and made it easy for me, and I think that I do have a wealth of knowledge about these players, which is obviously a great thing for a broadcaster because there's little dead times, little pockets that I can, you know, pop in a personal story. But I think I also have a lot to learn and a lot. I've only done it a handful of times, and it's real work. And there's it's definitely not easy. And I think I have a lot to learn and a lot of ways to get better. But I mean, this is pretty much, you know, it's. This whole pickleball journey for me is pretty much, you know, how I wanted to do it. I wanted to, I had Deckel. I wanted to, you know, win some big tournaments, have some good results, and then basically just be able to do what I wanted to do in the sport, whatever that may be, teaching, commentary, maybe some business possible side of it. So I'm very happy with how everything's going, and I enjoy commentary, so I'll probably be back in the booth at some point.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think you're right. I think having somebody that can lead you into those spots, especially when you're new coming into it, like, well, one, you're you know, it's easier for you to explain what you're explaining, but it's also great because you're seeing how she does it. So,
for sure.
You know, moving forward, you know, even just by commentating with her, like you're gaining knowledge from her as well.
Oh, definitely. And she, our sideline reporter for that was Lauren McLaughlin. Yeah. And so Lauren was taking advantage of that and asking some questions to Cameron as well. And I was, you know, listening to those responses, and Cameron had something to say. She was, you know, Lauren's like, well, what if they don't give you that much on the interview? And Cameron's like, well, I do this, and this. Yeah. And so it was cool to be around that and see all that. And
honestly, I know I said I'd turn off the commentary, but like, shout out to commentators, right? Like those are long days, dude.
And it's tough. Because
you usually have, I mean, you can be on there from 8 a.m. to evening.
Yeah.
Sun up to sundown.
Yeah. The end of our stream, I completely zoned out, and she literally said something for 2 minutes, and then I repeated it verbatim for 2 minutes. And she just kind of was like looking at me, and I was like, oh my God, did you just say that? And she was like, yes, I did. So that was kind of funny. And really, there's quite a bit of dead time in tennis, and it's tough in pickleball.
That's very true.
To say something of value and keep it concise to not talk during the point. So it's impossible to never talk during the point, but I really try to not do it too much, and I think that's important.
But pisses everybody off.
Yeah, but to say something of value in like 6 seconds or something like that, and then have the point start is not easy. No. Is not easy at all.
I agree. It's got to be I'd be curious on Cameron's take or any of the pros that do other sports that come into pickleball and also do commentary.
Sure.
Like a volleyball, I haven't seen much pro. I don't watch it,
yeah,
but like
me either.
I'd be curious on how challenging commentating on pro pickleball is versus
definitely. And there's a couple times where, you know, I'm a little brain dead sometimes. So I would start a thought. Revisit this after this point, and then I would kind of forget exactly what I was going to say.
That sounds like my experience this entire podcast.
Yeah, right. So I'm just like, all right, Cameron, right after this point, and then it happens.
Gone.
Okay, and then move on to something.
Because
else,
when you're watching the point, you're also dissecting it.
Yes, I'm
just
like,
he did that.
Yes,
that,
right.
And then
right.
It's gone.
Yeah, and you're dissecting it, and then I might have something good to say about the fourth shot of the point, but it's a 50 ball rally. And then, so I'd be like, okay, well, I can't talk about what I was going to this pattern. I got to talk about something later in the point. So it's real work for sure.
Yeah. How are we going to do this podcast moving forward? Like love in person. We have a camera.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun too. Are we looking good, Prof, is it still on? Okay, good. Obviously we'll be at some tournaments together. We have a couple we're playing.
Sure.
So that'll be easy to do in person. Mm-hmm. I think, so there's a couple podcasts that I watch watch. There's clips online, but it looks like it's in person, but it's not. So we got to figure that out. But, because what do you want to do this? You want to do this weekly?
I'm going to leave that up to you, buddy.
I'll give you a suggestion and we'll see if it feels right.
Okay.
You just tell me if it feels right.
Because if it feels right,
you'll do it.
I will tell you and I will do it.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And if it doesn't, you'll tell me that too.
Correct.
So, Prof, if I need him to do something and it doesn't feel right, I might need you to make it feel right.
she's the only one.
She's the only one that can get through to you. Prof, join us. How?
you come on over, Prof.
Prof, come on.
Oh, Adam.
Okay, yeah. So
where to start?
Yes, where?
Yes,
so you've been married for how long?
10 days.
Got married in Peru.
Yes.
10 days fresh. I love your spot here.
Yes. I think 3 to 5 days into it, I think it was 3 days,
we
decided to jump into a glacier lake. That was my idea.
Sounds epic.
It did not feel right to Adam, but he did it anyway.
So you weren't glad you did it?
It was actually not that bad.
Oh.
So I might be okay with doing it. And actually what happened is when Corinne jumped in her wedding dress into the glacier lake.
Did you keep your wedding dress, by the way? Or did you just leave it in Peru?
No, I still have it.
Okay.
It's here with me in Newport Beach.
Epic. So you jumped in with your, like you weren't worried about damaging, you didn't care.
No, it was already dirty.
That's adventurous.
You know,
that's very adventurous.
It was, yeah.
Was it spontaneous? Like it was just like,
well,
wasn't
we had talked about it, but we weren't totally set.
He definitely wasn't totally set.
Oh, he definitely was not totally set. We decide we're going to decide in the moment.
Yeah.
And we decided to jump, or I decided and he went along with it.
Yeah. It didn't feel right, but he did it anyways because he will do what doesn't feel right for you.
Occasionally, yes.
Occasionally.
Occasionally.
Yes. Occasionally. I can't push the limit. I mean, one activity a day typically.
Yeah. We can't go too hard.
I don't do anything all day. I don't care what it is.
You don't do anything. I see.
Yeah,
no activity all day long.
Yes, exactly. So there's nothing that I'm going to do that's going to be a full day because that's just too much. So I'm a one activity a day guy. Usually,
but how long is that?
Usually I prefer it to be somewhere between 1 and 3 hours. sometimes it ends up being longer and you know that it is what it is. If I have to work a little bit or whatever, but 1 to 3 hours worth of activities per day is that's my comfort zone.
Is that okay with you, Prof?
No.
You'd prefer to do more activities and for longer time periods.
Yes. 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 I'm probably more of a 2 to 3 activity a day.
And person. What time window for each?
Oh boy.
Sounds like you need to find a friend.
That's you. Sounds like you need to find a friend.
Well, man. Well, for the Glacier Lake activity, unfortunately, Adam jumped in the lake and it was very cold and his ring slipped off his finger.
He shriveled up.
It's gone forever.
I shriveled up in a lot of ways jumping in that Glacier Lake.
Turtle.
Yes, yes.
I was going to ask if it was a special ring. Of course it was a special ring, but because, you know, the guy's ring's not usually uber expensive.
It was pretty expensive. It was like $300 or $400.
Yeah,
so expensive. Now we got like a $10. I'm going to get like a package of 10 $10 ones because I'm incapable of not losing things. Also, along with losing my voice, I lost my phone last night too. I don't know where it is. So,
actually what I love about you because you're not that worried about it. Like you're not like overly concerned. He's just I don't have my phone. I lost it.
There might be ones. I looked fairly hard, but there's a chance that it's still somewhere. So
you got to the point where you just accepted that you didn't have it and then it was gone.
I'm not much of a fan. I mean,
you're not gonna worry about it.
You have to have the phone, but I'm not really a huge fan of it. So
no, you're not a big phone guy.
Yeah, you know. So that's
if it shows up, it shows up. If not, you'll get a new one.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely
that
correct.
Seems to be the plan.
Prof, how bad do you want him to keep looking for it and find it?
I think it'd be great if he found his phone. Yeah. And
do you think it was irresponsible that he lost it? here we go.
I'm the third wheel in this relationship. I promise you that.
This is the fun part.
Yes, and I always complain about me just constantly waiting on Corinne throughout the day, and Rob just always chimes in, just like, Corinne, I've never seen you late for anything. It's really weird. I don't know what's going on. So this is a special three people right here.
I'm better at being on time for other people, not as
you don't give a damn about me. Yeah,
that's other not true.
She has zero sense of urgency when I'm irritated.
It's really hard to believe. I've just never seen her do this.
Oh my god.
Honestly, like, she makes quick decisions. She's always prepared and she's always on time.
Incorrect. For other people, yes. I'm an afterthought. I guess that's marriage, though. Is that not?
No.
I mean, that's what they say. That's marriage. So.
I'm an afterthought.
At all. Do you keep sunscreen in your backpack? Do you always have water?
Yes, I do.
You always have liquid IV.
I do.
No, you don't.
I'm better at
taking. This is good. We're doing it.
I am better at taking care of myself day to day than you are.
Here we go.
Long term, that's not true. You're a much better long term planner, but day to day, I think I'm better than you at taking care of myself.
I think what Adam actually says sometimes is, Kren's a disaster short term.
Yeah, she is. Like there'll be times we'll be at a tournament and it's like 2 p.m. at a tournament. She's like, oh, I forgot to drink water earlier. And I'm like, what are you, or you didn't eat or something.
Normal for me to not eat very much on a tournament.
Well, I know that, but to drink water.
Oh, I need to drink water.
Water's important. Water's important.
So,
Prof, what's your feeling about all the pickleball stuff going on? Like the whole landscape. So we just had MLP, you just played. What's your take on it? I know you said you're in a much better place with it than you have been in the past. What's that come from?
I am in a much better place. I've been around the sport for a long time. I've been playing for a little more than 8 years. And so I saw pickleball pre-professional pickleball.
Yeah.
And then I've seen the money come in and it's gotten much bigger, which I think is great for the sport. But it's definitely changed the way people, some, not everyone, it's changed the way some people behave, which is natural. I think when money is on the line, you are going to see some different behavior. But for me, just because of what I loved so much about pickleball when I first started playing, and a huge part of that was the community side of it, it was a little bit sad for me to see a change in that way.
When do you feel that it actually did, like, when did it change? Like, you're like, oh, this is not this like what it used to be.
It really was when the, so I don't think everybody knows this, but there was an attempt at a professional tour before PPA and APP, and it failed.
Okay.
There wasn't that much money in that tour. So nothing had really changed at that point, but when PPA and APP started, there was real money.
Yeah.
And that's really when it changed.
Was that PPF?
Yes.
PPF. Yeah. No, I remember that. I remember watching some,
interesting.
I watched all the YouTube videos when I first started, and I remember watching, I think it was, Curtis Campbell.
I don't know who that
is. You don't know Curtis Campbell?
I've heard lots of stories, but
oh,
I don't know.
Oh, God. That. That's, yeah, he's old school. So anyway, sorry, that's off topic. Go ahead and continue.
I didn't know there was an attempt at a pro tour before that. Yeah. So that's news to me, so that's interesting.
So the PPF, the Professional Pickleball Federation,
okay,
was the original one. They ran out of money. It didn't work out. So really when PPA and APP got started, which was really right before COVID.
Right around COVID.
Yep. Yeah. That's when there was a big change in the sport.
Yeah. In terms of people's behavior and how, like, they...
Well, sure. There was a lot more money at that point. The tours brought it in. And yes, people started to change.
It wasn't social anymore.
It wasn't social anymore,
It's a business, right? That's what it turned into.
It definitely... It became a business, which it was bound to happen. Yeah. It was just sad for me in a way to see that happen.
And you, I think you can... I don't think you're saying that, you know, people shouldn't have their own interests in mind, but I think that there is definitely a way to have all of it, you know,
and not
everyone's approach to that is going to be perfect, but I think that there's definitely a way to, you know, market yourself, get what you need to out of the sport, make sure you're taken care of, but also, you know, treat people properly and, you know, not step on people along the way. So, I think it's, you know, there's probably not a perfect recipe for that, but there's definitely a way to do both.
There is. So I think that part of what's happened is I've had to navigate this change in the sport, and I now no longer feel like, well, everybody's my friend and everybody's going to treat me the right way. And I've, which is life. I've just had to make a change in how I go about, you know, who I hang out with at tournaments and, you know, how somebody might treat me on court versus off court. And that's just sports. It happens. But I think I've learned how to navigate that a little bit. So I'm enjoying myself much more.
And the schedule is a little bit better for you now. So during that stretch last year, especially, it was... What you were doing was pretty brutal with your, you know, your teaching job and going to these tournaments and, you know, some of the changes with the people. So it's kind of a perfect storm. So I think you're in a much better place.
I am.
Yeah, yes. I remember last year, like, you weren't having fun.
Yeah, we were burnt out, both of us.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really, like, me too. Like, it was a really long year. I remember being at Beer City Open last year and just being like, it was like maybe, it was a long streak of tournaments. And I was just like, I was playing a match, and I was like, I don't care if I win.
No, I'm serious. Like, I've played a match with, like, I've played matches with Dekel where I am obviously trying my hardest, and I'm just, like, almost thinking, like, Dekel, just play bad for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to play bad for 5 minutes because I can't do that to Dekel.
Right.
If it was just me, I probably would have tanked and lost or whatever, but it's just, like, Dekel, just, you know, shit the bed for 5 minutes. Let's get out of here. let's not be playing pickleball anymore. And that's a pretty horrible headspace to be in when you're thinking those kind of things in like a metal match or something.
Yeah.
You know? So burnout is real. And I think,
especially with pickleball, I mean, it's not just physical, right? Yeah. It's physically taxing because tournament days are very long days. You can play 7-8 matches, that kind of thing. And it can be all day. And, you know, kind of really, really hot, grueling conditions. You see cramping all the time, but not just physically. Like, for me, it's more of like the mental taxing. Like, it's like pickleball is a unique sport in terms of like strategy and matchups and playing the right way and being able to adjust and see stuff on court. And like, for me, it's just like the mental taxation of that, of doing that week in and week out for multiple weeks. And you eventually just like your brain's fried.
No, for sure. And like, I've been in that situation before at the end of a tournament where I probably don't feel that bad physically, but I start doing dumb stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's so obviously you can fade physically, and that's going to be an issue, but you can fade mentally as well. Your shot selection, some pulling triggers from weird stuff, all the stuff you weren't doing early in the day, you're doing odd things later in the day. So there's a lot of different ways it happens, basically.
Yeah. So you've seen, it's interesting because I came, like, my first tournament was the first PPA ever, like that one in Mesa. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see pickleball from, you know, pre-tour. And you saw pre-tour where it sounded like it was fun, it was social, good community, like everybody got along. It was, and it's changed. Like, you know, you could look at MLP yesterday. Like, it's changed, I'm assuming, a lot. It's changed from when I first came in to now significantly.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of how people are and how they behave and... And I think it's, as we were talking, Adam, when, you know, players start to practice together and like real money's on the line every single tournament, it's only gonna get crazier, in my opinion.
It will. And I will say, you know, it's great for the sport that all this is happening. There's more money, people can make a living playing the sport that we all love.
Yeah.
But there's certainly going to be some negative that come along with that.
Yeah.
And yes, it's, to be honest, when I started playing pickleball, I just assumed it was going to be my hobby.
Yeah.
And it became so much more than that, which is awesome. It was like an accidental second career for me.
Because people that don't know, you're a professor. That's why we call you Prof.
I'm a professor.
So just to give people context, because we call her Prof. Adam began calling her Prof early, right? Early on?
Light him up, Prof.
Light him up, Prof.
Yeah, light him up, Prof. Yes. Yeah. So,
so
I'm not exactly sure why that started, but yeah, I like it, and I continue.
It felt right. That's why I started.
Robert, that was a good one. Yes. So, she's the Prof then and still the Prof. So,
because you are a professor at?
Finance.
Yes. At Campbell?
At Campbell University, yes.
Not too many female finance professors.
No, they're
unicorn.
Not.
Young.
Unicorn.
30s.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Usually I see, like, I think tweed jacket, 75.
Yeah, or like
you know.
You're like, yeah, yeah, for sure.
No, I'm definitely unusual for a finance professor. Yeah. But Adam will, you know, gladly say
what?
Or
say what?
Openly say I'm the man in the relationship.
Oh yeah. No, for sure. No, absolutely. I mean, it's 2022, y'all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she goes to work and
Adam takes care of the house.
She comes home. I'm looking for some attention.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
sprucing up before she gets there. I mean, this is, you know, this is just what it is.
This is 2022.
Yeah, it's 2022. But
it's not just that. Like, I'm a very logical thinker. I plan ahead. I'm not.
It sounds just like Adam.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you need someone like that in a relationship. So it's me.
Oh, this is great. So you're illogical. You don't plan ahead.
No. I'm pretty logical.
Yeah, you are logical.
Actually pretty logical.
Yeah. Yeah. But absolutely does not plan ahead.
Uh-uh.
I mean,
no, I'll take that one.
Adam, we need to invest in this money for you. So no matter, you know, you always have to just... No, you never know what's going to happen. You need to plan. We need to have something in place for when you retire.
He's like, I am retired. What are you talking about? I'm a podcast host and I do commentary and I play a little pickleball.
I've been retired for like 20 years and I'm 40.
Sure. He's
you somehow managed to retire your whole life.
Yeah,
that's impressive, actually. Give him props for that.
Living the dream.
Well, yeah. Except where are his savings? I mean, he's got to live this life forever. He's always going to have to work if he doesn't save.
But is it work if he's podcasting and having a great time? Mm.
If he enjoys it, then sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you love
Never
your
worked
job,
a day in his life, has he?
Absolutely.
Hey, where is that beer? Let me grab that.
It's fantastic dynamic, the three of us. So one thing I do think, like, so I don't know if money is actually the thing that's going to change people and change the sport. I think you see all sports that like come up and have more prize money. If the prize money is equitable for everybody as it rises, I think there's less, you know, issues. But like yes. MLP, for example, like 25K versus 6K if you lose tonight.
Right.
That's like, yeah, I hate that person. Like, I'll, you know what I mean? It's like, right. But if it was 25K or even if it was like 10K, 6K, you know, but we're talking 20K difference between winning and losing on rally scoring and matches right. that go like that. So I think that's kind of a special circumstance where hopefully as all earnings rise, mm-hmm. it'll be less kind of an issue.
I agree with you. I think that helpful. Once you
no pessimist.
Well, I'm going to be optimistic. Yeah. You know, all of this has been also a little bit different for me because I came from golf.
Yeah.
And in golf, you're not. And there are a few match play tournaments, but usually it's just you versus the golf course. You're not really directly competing with another person. So everyone's very friendly for the most part.
Yeah.
And then obviously I know the tennis atmosphere is a little bit different. It's probably
super intense. It's getting to, it's starting to feel like pickleball now, actually.
Okay. Oh, it's,
isn't it like
pickleball
that
will
feel?
Be tennis.
Yeah. It's getting that
it's
feel
gonna
now.
Be loners and little pocket. Do you have a couple friends? There's not going to be camaraderie. It's just, yeah. it's just almost a guarantee.
I agree.
But I do think that when you have more people being able to make a living off of their winnings, then it will be a little less
stressful, right? Yes. It's like, you know, ripping off 25K at a tournament, like that's, you know, that's 4 months work for people.
Right.
Like in pickleball, you know what I mean? It's like that's a half year's paycheck in one chunk by winning a few matches.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I can see why people are so upset and so up in arms and of rules and all the things. So, yeah.
And that came up yesterday when everybody was talking about what happened. Just the amount of money that we're not playing for $5,000,
yeah.
$6,000.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
It's $25,000. Yeah. It's real money.
Yep.
And so yeah, everybody is taking it a little bit more seriously, and not having clear rules was very upsetting. Yeah. I think
to have seen the payout a little bit more. Like, yeah, it's a good marketing thing to be able to say winning team walks away with 100K, right? It's great. Sounds good. Makes pickleball look big. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that payout distributed a bit more evenly like you see at other tournaments, right? Because then I think you have less, like especially when you're in a growth mode like this, like MLP is, things are breaking on the fly, they're fixing things on the fly. And I think that's a big reason is the delta between first and second so large. Like, people are going to get pissed.
Absolutely. And the thing is, they could have distributed that money a little bit more evenly, and it still would have been the largest payout ever, probably, for first place.
Yep.
So I understand what they were trying to do. Obviously, it's a huge media play. You get a lot of attention having the $100,000 payout. But yes, I think spreading it out a little bit would have been great.
Yeah, and I think because I remember looking at the player payout thing, and it was like the overall amount that players are getting paid is wildly large, right? It's like 300 something.
Yes.
Use that number.
Uh-huh.
Use that number and distribute more evenly. Yeah, winners deserve a huge bump, right? Like, mm-hmm. they won the tournament. They won Major League Pickleball. So give them not 20K more, right? Like, make it 15, then 10 or something. I don't know. But, like, something where you're not – like, it's just going to cause issues, in my opinion.
And we saw that this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Adam?
Oh, you guys
do you agree with that?
You guys were doing great.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I was just
supervising.
Yeah, I was listening. And I was listening. You guys did great. I agree.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the future of pro pickleball? We'll wrap it here because we've been rambling for a long time.
Sounds good.
I see. You know, there is obviously growing pains. A lot has happened in a very short period of time. But the sport is so popular. More and more people are coming in every day, and I don't see this isn't going to go away. I don't think professional pickleball is going to go away. I think that the challenge is figuring out how to make it a viewership sport, and I think that that is one of the huge positives of MLP. They're experimenting and they're trying to find a way to make this popular for TV. which is the reason for the rally scoring. Yeah. And I think we're going to find the right formula. I think it's going to, somebody's going to figure it out. Yep. Maybe it will be MLP. But I don't know what the timeline is going to be, but I see this being something really big in the future.
Agree. And this is exactly how you do it too, right? You test different stuff. Like you test this MLP format, like PPA tested something this weekend. Like
right.
you throw out a bunch of stuff, see what people like best and then roll with it. Right. So I've always
yeah. kind of said what would make a big leap would be people that don't play viewing. Maybe pickleball is different in other sports where we could actually get so many active players playing that you wouldn't even have to have...
Need a casual viewer.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, barely anyone plays football anymore or...
That's
or,
super or, interesting,
or,
actually.
Or whatever. It's like this could actually be a sport where we could have so many people participating minimum a couple times a month or whatever that you could have a viewership that is almost all players and it could yep. actually possibly work where in other sports, I don't think that's possible at all.
That's interesting, right? Like, so if we, you know, let's call current, like, so the goal is 40 million players by 2030, right? Like mm-hmm. that's kind of been, you know, the flag in the ground. That's what everybody's pushing for. If you get like right now, these live streams get 1,000, 2,000 viewers of pro pickleball. You get a tiny percentage of that, you know, the 40 million people that are playing, and you have big numbers already. So it's a great point, Adam. Like maybe you don't need that casual viewer that doesn't play watch, or maybe there's just so many people that play pickleball eventually that, you know, most people play.
Yeah. So we shall see.
We shall see. Well, that's the first episode of.
I just wanted to
see if you do it. No,
I missed my cue.
This is a test. This is like what you said yeah. with Cameron Irwin, like where you just say like the end. You just you're zonked.
I gave everything I have to give. I am zoned out at this point.
You did fantastic.
Thanks, buddy. But appreciate that.
We'll continue. It feels right. Sometime in the future.
It feels right.
Feels right. Profs, you gotta say it.
It feels right.
There we go. See you guys next time.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.